Hello, friends. Before starting this episode, I wanted to give everyone a quick update. When I began the first episode, it was my way of embarking on a personal journey to discover my own history and heritage and share that with local members of the community. It was the first podcast I'd ever done, so I was learning as I went along. Since that first episode, the response has been overwhelming. I had no idea that there were other Indos just like me, searching for the same answers, filling in the blanks of history where they could, and often, just as importantly, knowing that they weren't alone in their experiences. Since that first episode, I've definitely learned a few things on the way. This episode features some new equipment, as you can probably tell in the sound quality of my voice, and some deeper subject matter that I didn't know I'd be touching on. This episode took a little bit longer to produce due to the heavy nature of the content. There were times I had to stop and take a breath just to comprehend the totality of the story that I was telling. Several people who contributed content did so with a lot of hurt in their heart as they shared tears and relived painful stories. Some of the stories were way too personal to share, but hopefully I did everyone justice in the way the content was presented. I encourage everyone listening to this podcast to do additional research, learn a little bit more about global atrocities, and openly share what you've learned with your friends and neighbors. I hope this episode is as edifying to you as it was to me putting it together. With that, I am humbled and privileged to share with you the latest episode of Indo and America, The Dutch-Indonesian Journey. Welcome to Indo and America. I'm your host, John von Waltzogen. October 7th, 1981. A 61-year-old man from Indonesia dies in Mecca, Saudi Arabia, while performing his Hajj pilgrimage. Friends and family of that man have his body returned to Indonesia, where it is laid to rest in a public burial ground in Surabaya, East Java. The man's name was Sutomo, known in Indonesia as a great revolutionary. But to the survivors of the Bersiap, he was a notorious butcher. During the Bersiap period, Sutomo personally encouraged atrocities against the Dutch Indo people and personally supervised numerous summary executions of hundreds of Indo civilians. To this day, eyewitness accounts document his atrocities against the Indo people. And to them, October 7th, 1981, the day that he died, was a day of relief. The man who single-handedly slaughtered the families of the survivors was finally dead. Known in Indonesia as Bung Tomo, meaning Brother Tomo, Sutomo is best known for his role as a military leader during the Indonesian National Revolution against the Netherlands after World War II. He played a central role in the Battle of Surabaya when the British attacked the city in October and November of 1945. Sutomo was born October 3, 1929, in a village in Surabaya called Kampung Blauran. His father was a clerk, and his mother was of mixed Javanese, Madurese, and Sudanese ancestry. He received the equivalent of a Dutch high school education prior to the Japanese occupation of the Dutch East Indies. He spent much of his young life working menial jobs, but then at the age of 17, joined the Indonesian Scouting Organization, where he achieved the rank of Pramuka Garuda, a rank which only three Indonesians before the Japanese occupation had achieved. During that occupation period, he worked for the Dome News Agency, the official Imperial Japanese news agency in Surabaya. Sutomo became famous by setting up Radio Pemberontakan, or Radio Rebellion, which would broadcast a message of solidarity and fighting spirit among the Indonesian youth. In 1944, during the time of the Japanese occupation, Sutomo was chosen to be a member of the Japanese-sponsored Gerakan Rakyat Baru, in English, the New People's Movement. Following the occupation and during those early stages of the Indonesian National Revolution, Sutomo played a major role when fighting broke out in Surabaya between Indonesian nationalists and Anglo-Indian military forces. While the battle ended in defeat for the Indonesians, it served to become a unifying force for the supporters of the independence cause. Sutomo was a brilliant public speaker. His radio broadcasts were heavy with his distinctive emotional speaking style. Sutomo had a slightly nasal but penetrating voice that was described by many as an oratorical style that was second only to Sukarno in its emotional power. When seen in person, Sutomo had piercing, burning eyes with a stare that seemed to look directly into the eyes of individuals in the audience. On November 10, 1945, at the peak of the Battle of Surabaya, Sutomo, now known as Bung Tomo, delivered a now famous Freedom or Death speech, which sparked the fighting spirit of the people of Surabaya. The day of that speech is now known as Hari Pahlawan, or Heroes Day, which, from the Indonesian perspective, commemorates and honors the struggles of heroes and fighters in defending Indonesian independence. And every year, on that day, Bung Tomo's speech is replayed across the country. As long as the Indonesian warrior still has red blood that can make a piece of white cloth become red and white, the Indonesian colors, then we will not surrender to anyone. On behalf of all of us, prepare for a precarious situation. On behalf of all of us, let me warn you, we will attack them, and we will show our enemies what freedom fighters look like. And for us, we are better destroyed than not being free. Our motto rings true, freedom or death. And we will be sure in the end, surely victory will fall into our hands. Because Allah is always on the side of right. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. There's no denying that for the Indonesian people, they see Sutomo through the lens of not only revisionist history, but also the perspective of the victors. Only recently has there been an interest in Indonesia to look at its history in a more objective fashion. Was Bung Tomo a war criminal, or was he a hero? Halfway across the world, in the Netherlands, the way Sutomo is remembered is considerably different than the way he is idolized in Indonesia. A Dutch historian and history teacher named Stefan covers many historical topics on his YouTube channel, History Hustle. Several episodes discuss the Dutch East Indies and the Bersiap period. Here is how one episode covers that period in history.
From March 1942, the Japanese Empire ruled Indonesia, previously known as the Dutch East Indies. They trained local youngsters and fed them with national sentiments that if the aliens would try to reoccupy the Indonesian archipelago, they could form one front against them. Dutch civilians were in Japanese internment camp, but millions of Indonesians were put into forced labor projects, of which many of them died. And also millions of Indonesians starved because the Japanese took all the rice. And then, at 15 August 1945, the Japanese Empire surrendered unconditionally. The surrender of the Japanese Empire resulted into a power vacuum. Contrary to what happened in Europe, where the Nazis were pushed away and the 80s came in their place, in Indonesia nobody came into the place to restore order. And that's where the Pemudas came in. That were these nationalist youngsters that were trained and armed by the Japanese. They demanded immediate independence. Now, the national leaders Sukarno and Mohammed Hatta, they were more cautious. They did not want to provoke either the Japanese or the British, but they were put under pressure by these Pemudas. The Pemudas kidnapped Sukarno, and 2 days later, on the 17th of August 1945, he declared the Independent Republic of Indonesia. When the British set foot ashore in Java, it resulted into an orgy of violence. The European colonizer was back and should be defeated and wiped out once and for all. Tens of thousands of European and Indo-European civilians were massacred. Then there were also the Dutch civilians who were still stuck into the Japanese internment camps. They were now free to go wherever they want, but soon realized it was not safe outside the prison gates. The British ordered the Japanese to protect the Dutch civilians, which in most cases they did. So imagine, from one day to the other, the Japanese became from tormentors to guardian angels. And then there was also the Battle of Surabaya in October and November 1945. When the British entered the city, it resulted into heavy clashes with armed Pemudas, who got arms from the Japanese, with tens of thousands of casualties as a result. And however the British won this battle, it helped to fuel the fighting spirit of the Indonesian nationalists. The hostilities were promoted and inflamed through the radio by the nationalist Sutomo. He spoke that all Dutch and Indo-European dogs should be slaughtered on a cruel way. Now, this guy is considered a hero in Indonesian history. However, he can be held responsible for the horrific death of countless men, women, and children. The chaotic Bersia period lasted till the beginning of 1946. After that, the Dutch took over of the British positions.
Dutch history books often talk of Sutomo's race-based execution of civilians. It was, after all, no secret that Sutomo, like the Japanese before them, wanted Indonesia to be for Indonesians, not to be shared with the Europeans or the Dutch Indonesians, whom they did not consider to be Indonesian in any way. Some of the best documented atrocities in Indonesia took place in Surabaya between September and November of 1945 at the Simpang Club. Numerous men and women were rounded up, men and women who were Indo, European, Ambonese, and Manardinese. The reason for their rounding up was ostensibly to protect them from violence. But in reality, they were rounded up and imprisoned in the Simpang Club. If the individuals were found in possession of items linking them to the Dutch, such as pins, flags, or other innocuous contraband, the individuals were often summarily beheaded. Those who were allowed to live often underwent further and more severe interrogation, as well as different forms of torture. Those who survived to that point were often sent to prisons such as Bubutan and Kaliosok. It is a matter of history that those who were sent to Bubutan prison were never seen again. One account which survives says the only trace that were ever found of the prisoners at Bubutan was a pile of severed legs with shoes still attached. Numerous eyewitnesses at the Simpang Club reported the systematic interrogation, torture, and murder of hundreds of people, most of them documented between October 15th and October 17th, 1945. In addition, prisoners were also forced to clean the layers of blood off the floor in the execution room. It would be hard-pressed to find many people in Indonesia who would recognize the fact that Bung Tomo was responsible for numerous atrocities. While in the Netherlands, Sutomo's name is often mentioned in the same breath as the Bersiap. As part of my own research for this podcast, I contacted numerous people via social media to get their input on Sutomo. I was surprised how many people had first-hand or family knowledge of Sutomo's atrocities. Several people touched upon atrocities that were committed on themselves. The emotion I felt while reading some of the replies would be similar to the emotion one would feel while listening to a member of the Jewish community describing how they survived the Nazi Holocaust, with a few instances of people going detail for detail over things that happened while imprisoned in German concentration camps. The experience for a lot of Indos at the hands of people like Sutomo were not much different. It seems the only difference between the concentration camps in Nazi Germany and the concentration camps in the Japanese-occupied Dutch East Indies was that people still talk about Nazi Germany today. Sadly, the history of the Japanese concentration camps becomes more and more forgotten over time. and the atrocities that were suffered by imprisoned victims at the hands of people like Sutomo fade further into history, year after year. Going through some of the responses that I received back from my inquiry, it wasn't too difficult to find some very clear and direct opinions. One person wrote saying, "Sutomo was a sadistic monster." Another described him as a madman whose sadism in history was second only to Joseph Mengele. One other one more plainly said, "He's no hero. He's an asshole and a complete embarrassment to Indonesian history and the Indonesian people." One other response more poignantly said, "If there is a hell, there is a special place for people like Adolf Hitler, Saddam Hussein, and Sutomo." Unlike the Nazi Germany era, the Bersiap period lasted less than a year, but the nationalist extremism that followed would last much longer. These days, thanks to the age of the internet and social media, information on the atrocities of people like Sutomo are much more readily available and much less undeniable. One blog on the internet titled My Indo World had this to say: "Bing Tomo made sure that it was dangerous for women and children to leave the internment camps. The first Bersiap period led by General Sutomo had begun, in a gruesome manner on a large scale." The Dutch media, too, has started to tell the story more and more in recent years. The 2012 Dutch documentary entitled Archive of Tears depicted Sutomo as a type of evil spirit that was behind a series of brutal murders that occurred in the Simpang Club in Surabaya. Prior to Indonesia's independence, the Simpang Club was a hangout for the social elite and wealthy in the Surabayan community. Since it was more often Europeans that were members of elite society in Surabaya, it meant that the indigenous Indonesians often were unable to even enter the building, except for the staff that were working there. In 1945, the Simpang Club became the temporary headquarters of the Youth Indonesian Republic, or PRI. But the social media view of Sutomo as butcher didn't spring up in a vacuum. For decades, Dutch scholars had become more prominent in writing about that era. The Dutch research scholar Inez Hollander saw Sutomo as a sadistic madman who knew the power of propaganda through his speeches on the radio. She said, "His broadcasts of fury and hatred were paving the way for future massacres." That viewpoint was also echoed by historian Remy Lumpak, who in no uncertain terms had said that Sutomo in his speeches expressly encouraged atrocities such as the massacring of Indo and European people. Indeed, eyewitness accounts from the late 1940s survive to this day. It was the duty of an organization called the Opsporingsdienst Overledenen, or ODO, to gather information about those who were killed or lost immediately following World War II Indonesia. The ODO collected testimony of numerous individuals, including one in 1947 by a woman named Miss Sinsu Andries. It was the testimony of Sinsu Andries that Sutomo was the leader of a horrific massacre at the Simpang Club in Surabaya. She testified in her own words, "Behind the main building, we were searched and interrogated by executioner Rustam from Pendang and Sutomo. Before every execution, Sutomo asked the audience as a form of entertainment, 'What should be done with the enemy of the people?' 'Kill,' they shouted." It was testimonies like these that placed Sutomo at the site of the Simpang Club massacre. Many of Sutomo's followers were no better, as they continued to foster atrocities upon Europeans and Indos alike. Another testimony captured by the ODO records the following. One of the fanatical guards, when he saw the girl come in a fit of bloodthirstiness, took out a cobbler's knife and in a few seconds performed the following before my very eyes: ripping open her blouse with his left hand he cut her breasts off with a single swipe, and then, with his free hand, he ripped out what lay behind it, heart and so on. And fortunately for her, that brought instant death. The ODO, in its full investigation, managed to find one witness after another, testifying to brutalities committed by Tsutomu and his followers. Fast forward several decades to the beginning of the 21st century. By this time, Indonesia had established its nationalist movement, gone through the revolutionary Sukarno regime, and then later on survived the more anti-communist Suharto regime, which eventually collapsed in 1998. By this time, Indonesian intellectuals began focusing less on its own black and white nationalist ideology that had been part of the country's culture for decades, and began looking at their own history in a fuller, broader spectrum. Indonesian historian Asfi Vardam Adam, in his book Sabad Kontroversi Sejarah, or The Century of Controversial History, points out that much of the country's history as the people know it has been seen through the lenses of militarism and conquest of its past. He implied that viewing history in that way would downplay past mistakes and atrocities, and he also suggested that recognizing the country's own history, warts and all, is the only way to be honest about its own culture and future. As a member of the Indonesian Institute of Science, Adam is no stranger to understanding how the militaristic view of heroism in the country has resulted in a legacy of revisionist history, completely downplaying crimes committed against people of Dutch and Indo descent. He believed it was necessary to look at the more realistic history, which also includes recognizing the ugliness in the country's own past. These sentiments were echoed by Indonesian historian Abdul Wahid, who, in a 2016 essay in the periodical Tempo magazine, talked about understanding its own history by including a Dutch perspective, saying, "The figure of Bung Tomo is portrayed as one of the youth leaders who took the lead in, or at least allowed, a series of violent acts in mid-October 1945, which are considered to be one of the reasons for the Allied bombing of Surabaya. The Bir Siap is clearly unpopular, as it will undermine the nationalistic historical narrative promoted by the Indonesian government. However, the international community and the Indonesian history experts agree that the Bir Siap took place, and their views are also widely circulating online. Thus, whether we like it or not, agree or disagree, Indonesians will absorb these narratives too." In a 2017 interview, Wahid stated that his motivation to teach about the Bir Siap is mainly to add that additional nuance to the mono-sided and militarized version of the country's history. He said, "I really want my students to learn a different perspective on this period. I introduced the concept of Bir Siap as an extreme example to break their frozen memory, to show, look, this also happened. This is part of the story as well." Wahid had previously commented in the Jakarta Post in 2013 that while it is true that Indonesians suffered greatly during the colonial period, when families were disunited and displaced and civilians died, the Sutomo era narrative simply classified these losses as a sacrifice done by the will of the people without any additional explanation. While at the same time, the same losses that were experienced by the Dutch and Indo people were completely ignored. This has not been an easy concept for many Indonesians to grasp. A full generation has passed since the death of Sutomo, and the current generation has no memory of knowing an Indonesia whose inhabitants were Indonesian, Dutch, and Dutch Indo. Nevertheless, there are remnants of the past that still exist in Indonesia today. And these remnants speak directly to the atrocities committed by people like Sutomo and his followers. In the city of Surabaya today, there are two primary monuments that commemorate the actions of the Indonesian Youth Freedom Fighters, or Pemuda, specifically the era of the Pemuda during 1945 to 1949, in which the Indonesians staged their independence against the Dutch. The first monument is the Monumen Bambu Runcing, in English, Bamboo Spear Monument. This commemorates the weapon, the bamboo spear, which is a weapon that was commonly associated with the Pemuda. The second monument is a large plaque outside the former Simpang Club, which is now a youth hall. The English inscription on the plaque reads, "This was an exclusive Dutch club forbidden for natives and dogs. From September to November 1945, the Pemuda Republic Indonesia used it as their main headquarters in fighting against the combined Allied forces, which startled the world by its duration and tenacity." Both of these monuments commemorate the Pemuda as heroes who took action to expel the imperialist Dutch. It's clear, though, that a huge problem lies in the fact that those monuments represent only one monolithic and militaristic version of history. That version was written and shaped by the winners, the Indonesian military, to portray their own actions as sacrifices for the greater good of the country. For nearly eight decades, the official portrayal of killings has been painted as unfortunate but necessary for the sake of the nation. And the severity of those killings has been downplayed greatly. So much so, when you ask the typical Indonesian on the street their opinion of someone like Sutomo, they immediately will say he was a great hero and will also completely ignore or deny any killings or atrocities perpetrated by him. When pressed on the question, they will simply dismiss it as propaganda by the Europeans. But as a matter of history, that idea simply fails to account for victims that included unarmed women, children, and elderly. Nor is anything ever mentioned about the fact that a large number of the victims were from ethnic groups that were then considered alien, but are now considered to be Indonesian and their history forgotten. When the killings are mentioned, they are simply explained as minor unfortunate incidents, completely ignoring the fact that they were not part of clashes between armed groups, but were rather, more often than not, innocent civilians who were easy targets for the armed Pemuda. No mention is made of the fact that the Pemuda would deliberately round up and kill, or force other Indonesians to kill, unarmed men, women, and children in large numbers. Nearly forgotten in history is the fact that many of the victims were also Ambonese, Manadanese, Timorese, Chinese Indonesians, Javanese, and Sudanese, often women who were married to European men. Since many of those ethnic minorities at the time did very little to record their own written history, the atrocities committed upon them have been mostly forgotten, to the point where today it is unclear how many of those individuals were imprisoned, killed, or both. The members of those communities who are alive today simply have no recollection of the atrocities that their ancestors were victims to. The lack of recorded history among those groups has contributed to the ability of Indonesia to foster its revisionist history, making it even more difficult to finally dispel the image of Sutomo and finally begin accepting the atrocities and horrors that he committed upon his own people. At the beginning of this episode, I weighed the question of whether Sutomo was a hero or whether he was a sadistic butcher. A better question would probably be, to what level of atrocities can a person commit before the great things they do are overshadowed by their evil? As an American, this is a struggle that we have had in the United States society for quite some time. Recognizing the fact that Many of our great leaders, such as George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and others, were also slave owners. Or that people like Henry Ford were avowed bigots and anti-Semites. I was very surprised to learn in recent years how few young individuals in the United States have ever heard of Manzanar or the Presidential Executive Order 9066, which ordered the internment of 120,000 Japanese living in the United States into concentration camps. An executive order which was signed by the same president who recently had a memorial built to him in Washington, D.C. It is often human nature to ignore the bad while uplifting the good. Unfortunately, for the Indo people worldwide, that means an intentional effort to ignore incidents in history that involve their mass killing, summary expulsion, and erasure from their country's own history. All while cruel and sadistic leaders like Tsutomu are hailed as heroes who could do no wrong. The violence that happened in early Indonesia to the Indo and Dutch people was too great, too numerous, and too commonplace to warrant calling this man a hero. The Old Testament book of Isaiah records the famous phrase, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness." By any level of objectivity, Tsutomu was no hero. He was simply an example of evil who was given a hero's welcome. I'm John von Walsingen, and thank you for joining me.
For further study, be sure to check out Asfi Warman Adam's The Century of Controversial History, Silence Voices by Ines Hollander, the weblog My Indo World, the weblog Inside Indonesia, The Forgotten Killings, the collected works of Remy Limpach and Abdul Wahid, and the YouTube channel History Hustle.